This is NPR on Health. I'm Joe Neal, a health editor here at NPR. We've been doing some stories lately on the trouble that people are having getting health care here in the U.S., and I've picked out three of the best stories we've done recently to illustrate some things you may not have known about health care in America. First, a little background. Two of the stories in the podcast were triggered by a poll we did with the Kaiser Family Foundation and the Harvard School of Public Health. The poll aimed to drill down deeper into what people mean when they say the economy is bad and that they're having trouble getting needed health care. You can read the full results of the poll at npr.org. In the search box, just type Kaiser poll, two words, and it should come up as the first hit. Anyway, when we were sitting around discussing what questions we were going to ask in this poll, the senior science editor here, my boss, Ann Gudenkauf, said, "Why don't we find out how often people go to work when they're sick? Because they're worried about money." It's a topic she and I talk a lot about when we're talking about public health stories. People who come into work sick and spread their germs, children who go to school and spread their germs both to children and teachers and into the community. Well, the results we found were pretty surprising. The poll was done in just two states, in Ohio and Florida, because these are key states in this election year. And as far as we can tell, the question hasn't been asked in any national poll. But the results in both states were pretty similar and, like I said, surprising. NPR's Joanne Silberner explains.
The poll shows that working next to someone who's sick is common.
What we found is about half of people reported that in at least a number of cases, they go to work when they're sick and believe they should stay at home because of the financial issues they're involved.
That's Robert Blendon of Harvard University, who worked on the poll of adults living in Ohio and Florida. Employers are offering sick leave. About 67% of people with jobs in Florida said they had it. For Ohio, it was 60%. Blendon says there are two reasons people go to work sick.
There looks like there are two types of pressures. There's just no paid sick leave, and then there's just pressure from the employer expecting their employees to be there, and people concerned that if they do take a few too many sick days because they're ill, it'll affect their assessment of their performance, and they're worried enough that they say they're going to work when they're ill and probably think they shouldn't have gone.
Now, there's no information proving this trend of going to work sick is increasing. This appears to be the first time pollsters have asked this question. Other parts of the poll by NPR, Kaiser, and Harvard, though, suggest more workers are going to work sick. Many people said their financial situation has gotten worse over the last year. More than a third said they've had problems getting a good-paying job or a raise because of the economy.
The fact that so many people feel they can't stay at home because of economic reasons is not the way you would want to go in terms of the best health of families. You'd want them to feel that if they're sick, they have the option of staying home without serious financial penalties.
That's why San Francisco and Washington, D.C. have recently required many employers to give sick leave. Federal legislation has been proposed. But that's not the cure, says Mark Burgett. He's the vice president of government relations for the California Chamber of Commerce, and he fought against the San Francisco law. He says in this economy, businesses can't afford it.
If we start mandating those benefits, some of those entry-level positions will either find reduced benefits, reduced pay, or simply find the jobs eliminated.
He says the best way to deal with sick leave is to leave it up to the marketplace.
When an employee comes in to look for a job, whether it's an entry-level job or a higher-level job, they're not looking just at the salary, but they're looking at the entire benefits package. And sick leave and medical insurance and those sorts of things are part of that total package. And that's what allows one business to attract employees over another business.
Whether that will work in a struggling economy remains to be seen. Still, Burgett says he doesn't want his workers to come in sick. When they're ill, he tells them to stay home. Joanne Silberner, NPR News.
As I mentioned before, you can see the full report at our website, npr.org. On now to another aspect of people struggling to get health care. In many Latino communities around the country, people are buying prescription drugs without a prescription. They find them at swap meets or in storefronts, And it can be a problem because the drugs are often imported from other countries and may be counterfeit. Local police often don't know about the problem or don't know how to stop it. But in Los Angeles, a team of county health officers is working with law enforcement to do something. From member station KXJZ, Kelly Weiss reports.
It's a Sunday morning, and hundreds of people are moving through the Crow's Landing Flea Market in California's Central Valley. Christina Correa is guiding me. She works for the California Medical Association Foundation. Her job is to raise awareness about the overuse of antibiotics. She spots a card table at one stand openly displaying dozens of bottles of medication.
There's tetracycline, there's a lot of creams at the table, there's amoxicillin, ampicillin.
Correa says displays like this one are common. As we walk down a crowded aisle, we find 24-year-old Armando Rivera. Rivera says he doesn't have health insurance and gets medicine at a flea market when he needs it.
My mom, she's, you know, as soon as I get a sore throat, she's like, we got to go to the flea market and get some penicillin.
Christina Correa says it's part of the culture for many recent Latino immigrants to get prescription drugs this way. Antibiotics are a popular choice because in countries like Mexico, for example, you can just buy them over the counter. Dean Blumberg is an infectious disease specialist at UC Davis Medical Center. He says this is a big problem because misusing antibiotics can make it harder to fight off subsequent infections.
What we've seen in the past is a rise in antibiotic-resistant bacteria, and then these bacteria end up causing severe infections, pneumonia, meningitis, and other very severe infections that don't respond to first-line treatment.
The problem is it's hard to track these illegal sales. That's what John Harai says. He works with the Medical Board of California and goes after people who practice medicine without a license.
I think probably the biggest thing is not knowing how much more is out there, and being able to really, track that since it is so underground.
Still, that challenge hasn't stopped Los Angeles County. It put together a group of cops and health officers to not only track the sales, but stop them. The Health Authority Law Enforcement Task Force, or HALT, started about 10 years ago when two children in Orange County died after getting prescription drugs from an unlicensed provider. And as far as HALT knows, it's the only task force like it in the country. Today, HALT is hitting five locations in South Central L.A. L.A. Police Officer Juan Gomez bought prescription drugs undercover in Botanicas and general stores in this Latino neighborhood. Now he has search warrants, and the team is seizing the pharmaceuticals. At this general store, or tienda, the owner sells groceries, cigarettes, and party favors. HALT pharmacist Daniel Hance also finds antibiotics and pain relievers.
And this is for worms. Pinworm infections. We also found some urinary antibiotics and then another product called Intestomycina, which is a combination antibiotic and has chloramphenicol in it, which was banned in the U.S. in the oral formulation.
Hance says it's common to find injectable steroids or penicillin at these places as well because they're in high demand. He says many of these drugs haven't been approved for sale in the U.S. They're usually brought in from Latin America, and some, he says, are counterfeit. That means at best the drug could be just a placebo. At worst, it could contain harmful ingredients. The task force comes away with only a few boxes full of seized pharmaceuticals today. Health officers Eric Aguilar and Daniel Hance hope it's a sign the busts are working. They say drugs are much harder to find these days.
But in the past, years ago, it was on display.
Yeah, just walked,
and we'd come out of businesses with, truckloads.
Yeah.
Still, they suspect the decline may be due to the sales being pushed further underground. Dr. Dean Blumberg says this type of enforcement isn't enough. He says physicians need to warn patients about the dangers of illegally sold prescription drugs.
If people have a healthcare provider that they trust and that they respect and they hear it from them, that's going to have the most impact in terms of education.
Blumberg recognizes it's not always that simple and that access to health care plays a role here. Some immigrants, he says, can't afford health insurance. Others are here illegally and are scared to go to the doctor. So he says there should be more outreach to give them better options than the neighborhood tienda or weekend swap meet. For NPR News, I'm Kelly Weiss.
Lastly, another story off the NPR Kaiser Harvard poll. 1 in 4 people in Ohio and Florida told our pollsters that they're having trouble paying health care bills. When you look back across America, health care bills account for more than half the personal bankruptcies each year. NPR's Joseph Shapiro talked with one Florida woman who's been living pretty close to the edge lately.
When Jamie Drzewicki was diagnosed with breast cancer, that was a shock, of course, but she had health insurance, so she figured her medical costs were covered. She had her surgery last year.
And then the envelope started coming. $12,000 was one bill, $40,000 was another bill, $2,000 was another bill.
Today, she owes over $62,000.
Well, I don't know everything. I just know, you know, that I had insurance. And it's just not good enough. It wasn't enough.
It turned out that although she had health insurance through her job, there was a limit. Her insurance would pay up to $100,000 a year. Everything over that got billed to her. Drzewicki says before she got cancer, $100,000 seemed like a lot of coverage.
Not being greatly educated, it sounded like a lot of money to me for someone who just needed a mammogram every year and a pap smear and nothing else. I was a healthy person.
Drzewicki has spiked hair. She's in tight jeans and a T-shirt. She's 58, but looks years younger. She tells her story from the small recording studio in the pink house where she lives with her husband north of Miami. They're both musicians. They perform in clubs and on cruise ships. She's also got a day job, one with insurance. She's the activities director at a nursing home. She recently switched jobs because after her cancer, her boss gave her a hard time about missing work. Now she works at another nursing home. She gets paid less, and because it's much farther away, she spends a lot more on gas.
I am living paycheck to paycheck, and I am making the decision between food and my cancer medication, and I had to buy food on my Target card because I knew I could pay it off. And my husband killed me because he said, "Do you know the percentage on that?" I said, "Honey, I'll pay it off with my next paycheck. I'll never do that again."
Drzewicki is far from alone. In polling by NPR, Kaiser, and Harvard, 28% of people in Florida say they're having trouble paying their medical bills. They're not the uninsured people you might think.
They're people with health insurance, but it's not covering the copays, the deductibles, some of the drug costs, the dental care that may be needed, the home services. It's not deep enough to protect people.
That's Robert Blendon, who runs polling programs for the Harvard School of Public Health. He says one of the biggest surprises from the poll is that 1 in 5 people in Florida and 1 in 4 in Ohio say they've got collection agencies chasing them. The number one reason is unpaid medical bills.
And so the idea that middle-income people will be pursued by collection agencies for many people is not something they ever would have thought happened to them.
People like Jamie Drzewicki.
So they call my house 2-3 times a night. And the last collection agency guy said, "Well, you know, we're going to have to send it to the lawyers now."
One part of the hospital is helping her apply for charity care, but so far she hasn't been eligible. Another office in the same hospital called in the collection agency.
And the harassment has been part of my stress while I'm trying to recover. No joke.
She's got new insurance from her new job. There's one more surgery ahead in August for breast reconstruction. But she's pushed it back a few days because she's got a gig in a 2,000-seat theater in a Florida retirement community.
Yeah, I'm going to be at Winmore Village.
It's her first performance since the cancer.
But my stage name is Jamie Danger, Joe, so keep that in mind. The Jamie Danger Show at Winmore Village. She's back again.
And what she loves most in the world is to sing.
What can I sing? I say, what a day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Why, it's almost like being in love.
Joseph Shapiro, NPR News.
All the music of life seems to be...
That's it for this podcast. You can hear more health stories on your local NPR station. There's a list of them at our website, npr.org. While you're there, check out the Health and Science page. You can get to it by clicking on the link over on the left side of the page. Thanks for listening. I'm Joe Neal, NPR News.